What you're about to watch is, I believe, one of the most significant videos you've ever seen or ever will see. It contains material which is vital for all our futures. I hope you get to see it. The first time I recorded this, the whole thing mysteriously disappeared. My first book, written in the early 1970s, was largely about the hold the drug industry has over the medical profession. I was a young doctor when I wrote that book. And although I was absolutely shocked at the way drug companies lied and cheated, I was even more shocked at the way the medical establishment had allowed itself to be bought by the drug industry. When I investigated the parts of the medical establishment which are supposed to protect patients, I was astonished and horrified to discover that every single member of the medical establishment that I could identify was receiving or had received drug company money. And I'm not talking about free television sets, expensive holidays, wonderful weekends away in posh hotels and very pricey meals in fancy restaurants. All those were freebies enjoyed by many doctors. I knew doctors who ate lunch every day of the week in lovely restaurants paid for by drug companies. Most of the doctors running the profession were being paid as advisors and consultants. I found it impossible to find a doctor overseeing drug safety, for example, who hadn't been on the payroll of at least one big drug company. Even I was once offered money by a drug company. My book, The Medicine Men, now out of print, attracted a good deal of publicity nearly half a century ago when it first came out. And one drug company offered to pay me to go on a nationwide tour to promote it to doctors everywhere. Can you imagine? This was a book attacking their industry, and they were prepared to pay me to attack them. Why would they do that? So that they could buy me. I obviously laughed at them and said no, and they've never tried since then. I promise you, all the drug companies in the world haven't got enough money to buy me or buy my approval or my silence. I earn my living writing books, and that's it. Anyway, the point of all this is that when I talk about drug companies, I know what I'm talking about. All this background is important because in this video, I want to talk about two big drug companies which are said to be among those companies preparing coronavirus vaccines for the British government to use on the British population and indeed on the populations of other countries. First, let's deal with GlaxoSmithKline, which is known to its friends, and it no doubt has many of those, as GSK. GSK is one of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies, but in my view, if it made toasters, you'd never buy a toaster from them. In 2014, for example, GSK was fined $490 million by China after a Chinese court found it guilty of bribery. The court gave GSK's former head of Chinese operations a suspended prison sentence, and they gave suspended prison sentences to other executives too. GSK published a statement of apology. The BBC said that GSK had said it had learned its lessons, and the BBC added that one of those lessons was, open quote, clearly that foreign companies need to keep a close eye on China's fast-changing political and regulatory weather if they are to prosper, close quotes. Sadly, that misadventure in China wasn't GSK's only mistake. Here are some other recent ones. In 2006, GSK paid out $160 million for claims made by patients who had become addicts. In 2009, GSK paid out to the family of a three-year-old born with severe heart malformations, and in Canada, a five-year-old girl died 5 days after an H1N1 flu shot, and her parents sued GSK for $4.2 million. The parents' lawyer alleged that the drug was brought out quickly and without proper testing, as the federal government exerted intense pressure on Canadians to get immunized. In 2010, GSK paid out $1.14 billion, that's billion with a B, because of claims over a drug called Paxil, and they settled lawsuits over a drug called Avandia for $500 million. In 2011, GSK paid $250 million to settle 5,500 death and injury claims and set aside $6.4 billion, that's billion with a B again, for future lawsuits and settlements in respect of the drug Avandia. In 2016, GSK paid out $6.2 million in Canada. In 2017, GSK were ordered to pay $3 million to a widow. In 2018, GSK faced 445 lawsuits over a drug called Zofran. There's quite a list of drug recalls, but that's a bit dull, so let's also just look at the accusations of fraud, misbranding, and failure to report safety data. In 2012, GSK pleaded guilty to federal criminal offences, including misbranding of two antidepressants and failure to report safety data about a drug for diabetes to the FDA in America. The company admitted to illegally promoting Paxil for the treatment of depression in children and agreed to pay a fine of $3 billion. Again, that's billion with a B. That was the largest healthcare fraud settlement in US history at the time. GSK also reached a related civil settlement with the US Justice Department. The $3 billion fine also included the civil penalties for improper marketing of half a dozen other drugs. And there's a couple of other things you should know about GSK, GlaxoSmithKline. First, GSK is one of the top earning vaccine companies in the world. And in 2010, there were reports of narcolepsy occurring in Sweden and Finland among children who had the H1N1 swine flu vaccine. It's reported that not all the safety problems were made public. I've seen a report that by December 2009, for each 1 million doses of the vaccine given, about 76 cases of serious adverse events were reported, though this was not made public. A paper published in the British Medical Journal in 2018 reported that GSK had commented that further research is needed to confirm what role pandemics may have played in the development of narcolepsy among those involved. The writer of the BMJ article commented, "Now, 8 years after the outbreak, new information is emerging from one of the lawsuits that, months before the narcolepsy cases were reported, the manufacturer and public health officials were aware of other serious adverse events logged in relation to pandemics." In Ireland, the Irish government kept inviting people to get vaccinated, even when it was clear that the pandemic was on the wane and it was nowhere near the catastrophe portrayed by influenza researchers, governments, industry and the media. Claire Daly, a member of the Irish Parliament, called the adverse effects after pandemics a completely avoidable catastrophe. She told the then Prime Minister of Ireland, "The health service executive decided to purchase pandemics and continued to distribute it even after they knew it was dangerous and untested." It's perhaps worth noting that Professor Neil Ferguson, the Eddie the Eagle of mathematical modelling, perhaps without the charm, had predicted that the swine flu could lead to 65,000 deaths in the UK alone. In the end, the swine flu killed 457 people and had a death rate of just 0.026% of those infected. Second, Sir Patrick Vallance is the chief scientific advisor in the United Kingdom, and I suspect a key figure in dealing with the coronavirus in the UK and the plans for a vaccine. Vallance worked for GSK between 2006 and 2018. By the time he left GSK, he was a member of the board and the corporate executive team. All of the fines and so on which I've listed took place while Vallance was working as a senior figure at GSK. Still, I suppose it's nice for the company and the government to have someone in common, someone who knows both sides of the coin, as it were. But what are they going to do next? How about making the Yorkshire Ripper the Home Secretary? Or why not dig up Mussolini and make him the next Pope? Oh, and when Dominic Cummings went for a drive to test his eyesight after his drive up to Durham, he went to Barnard Castle, which just by coincidence is where GSK has big offices. And by another coincidence, 2 days after he went there, GSK signed a vaccine contract. And then there's AstraZeneca. In 2014, AstraZeneca agreed to pay $110 million to settle two lawsuits brought by the state of Texas, claiming that it had fraudulently marketed two drugs. The Texas Attorney General, when he announced the settlements, said the company's alleged actions were, open quotes, "especially disturbing because the well-being of children and the integrity of the state hospital system were jeopardised, close quotes. AstraZeneca said it denied any wrongdoing, so it paid out $110 million for not doing anything wrong, which was generous. That wasn't the only little problem for AstraZeneca. The company had to pay $350 million to resolve 23,000 lawsuits. The company was also charged with illegal marketing, including corrupt data in studies for marketing a drug to children, a sex scandal, and a poorly run clinical trial that could have compromised patient safety and data reliability. The study for this drug was financed by AstraZeneca and originally included 30 children. That's not particularly small for a drug trial, by the way. But only 8 children completed the trial, and the researcher who concluded the trial concluded that it was inconclusive. The researcher, incidentally, was paid at least $238,000 in consulting fees and travel costs. However, the study was published anyway and led to a national recommendation that the drug be used as the leading choice for children. Other studies which showed that the drug produced harmful results were never published and were covered up. A company email revealed, open quotes, "Thus far we have buried trials 15, 31, 56. The larger issue is how do we face the outside world when they begin to criticise us for suppressing data," close quotes. After years of investigations, AstraZeneca paid a $520 million fine in the US and paid $647 million to settle global lawsuits. In 2014, there was another scandal. After a trial described as sloppy, which resulted in a third of the participants dropping out because of side effects, results published in the American Journal of Psychiatry showed the drug as a promising treatment. The head of a psychiatry department was paid more than $112,000 for speaking and consulting fees and other payments. That, incidentally, is a common trick these days, used by all sorts of publishers and so on. It's similar to the technique used to buy politicians. The companies had a number of other lawsuits, but you've probably got the picture. If these companies were human beings, they'd be described as recidivists. They didn't make one mistake. They're both guilty of systemic deceits. So GlaxoSmithKline and AstraZeneca appear to be among the main contenders to make the coronavirus vaccine, which governments are so excited about and which we are told will be the answer to all our prayers. And drug companies, let us not forget, are going to be given indemnity so that they can't be sued if they do something bad. AstraZeneca is so confident that its vaccine will receive authorization that it has already started making billions of doses. The trials haven't been finished, but the company is making the vaccine. The World Health Organization says it's the leading candidate for the billions in profits that lie ahead. I shan't be allowing anyone to jab me with any of the rubbish made by either of these disgraceful companies, or indeed by any other drug company. As a doctor, I have no doubt in my mind that whatever vaccine is produced will be rushed into production and will be inadequately tested. In my view, we should not be doing any business with these companies or any other drug companies which put profits way above human health. These companies are serial cheats. How else would you describe companies which have enormous responsibilities but which regularly deceive, maim and kill all for profit? And why the devil was Valance appointed Britain's chief scientific advisor after working in a senior role for GlaxoSmithKline? Which among many other sins admitted to committing federal criminal offences? I suspect that Valance, with his experience at one of the world's top vaccine companies, will be part of the process which decides whether we have a vaccine and which company makes it. Please, please, ask anyone you know who thinks vaccines are wonderful or essential to watch this video. I cannot stress this enough. If enough people watch this video, then I believe there'll be no coronavirus vaccine and certainly no mandatory vaccines. It's absolutely no exaggeration to say that all our lives and our futures are at stake. Thank you for watching An Old Man in a Chair, and thank you for all your support and encouragement. Please copy and share the videos on Twitter and Facebook, from which I've banned, and on BitChute and any other platforms you can find. Let's spread the truth. If you'd like to put on a translation, that would be great. If my videos disappear, then please go to my website to find out where you can see them. The transcripts of all my videos, including the banned ones, are always on my website, www.vernoncolman.com. If you visit a mainstream media site, put on messages asking other people to watch these videos to find the truth. If all the people watching this video help one or two people a week to see the light, then the whole nonsense will soon be over. This channel has not been monetized. I haven't authorized any advertising and there's no sponsorship. If you'd like to see more videos from me, then please subscribe to my channel because the videos aren't always easy to find. Although it may feel like it at times, please remember that you're not alone. More and more people are waking up every day. I firmly believe that together we will win this fight. Thank you for watching.